Annie Lawrence stared first at the telephone, then at the list she held in her hand. Should she call all of them? Tell them it was cancelled? What could she say? That she had smallpox? She took a deep breath and glared at the telephone. It was her shop, her Sunday evenings. If she wanted to call it off, she... Beneath her hand, the phone rang. Annie and her black cat, Agatha, both jumped. "Agatha, love, it's all right," she called, but Agatha was already streaking toward her usual hiding place. The phone shrilled again. Annie yanked it up, remembering at the last moment to insert a modicum of cheer in her voice. "Death on demand." There was an instant's pause, then a familiar voice, an upsettingly familiar voice, inquired mildly, "Do you provide a choice? Defenestration? Evisceration? Assassination?"
"Max!"
She winced at the enthusiasm of her greeting. Determined to put that right, she repeated crisply, "Max," the inflection pleasingly even. "I liked the first Max better," he said in that lazy, good-humored, oh-so-Max-satisfied voice.
"Where are you?"
"Dear Annie, always straight to the point.
Look, Max, I'm busy and I've
no time for old friends. Dear friends." She could picture him, leaning casually against something, a newel post perhaps, as if it were a play. Or he might have a cellular phone in his Porsche. Max always liked to have the latest in everything. His blonde hair would be rumpled, his mouth quirked in an expressive grin, and his blue eyes, those damnably vivid blue eyes, alight with laughter. "I've had the devil's own time finding you, love. You could at least ask me how I did it." She waited. Max never needed encouragement to display his cleverness. "They were very friendly to me at your old alma mater, via long distance, of course. I spent enough to keep Sprint solvent for another quarter."
"You called SMU?"
She heard the bleat in her voice and winced again. "Did you think I didn't listen to your tales of college days?
You have a brain like a sponge."
"I will take that as a compliment. When I explained to the drama secretary that I was casting director of a new off-Broadway play and that we'd lost your number, well, it worked like magic." Annie objected. "They don't know where I am." "But they knew the name of your best chum, one Miss Margaret Melinda Howard, who now lives in Lubbock, which sounds like a cross between a hillock and a sick sailor. I chatted long enough with Miss Howard to finance a major promotional campaign by Sprint. She was thrilled to tell me that you, her most favorite orphan friend, had inherited the not-quite-beneficent estate of your crusty uncle Ambrose, and were now living on an island off the coast of South Carolina, which I brilliantly located on a large-scale map." Annie almost corrected him. She wasn't really an orphan. Her parents had divorced when she was 3, so she didn't remember her father. And the fact that he was apparently alive and well in California wasn't important. Margaret knew of her mother's death, of course. Annie realized she was twiddling her mind with every extraneous detail possible to avoid responding to Max's magnetism. It was to no avail. She felt the same old weak-kneed dizziness that swept over her every time he used to come around her tiny Greenwich Village apartment. But she had settled with that, done with it once and for all, and she wasn't going to stand here and let it all start up again. Besides, she glanced at the antique clock above the mantel, she was running out of time.